You are listening to Manufacturing Revival Radio, spotlighting the innovation, the business savvy, and the entrepreneurial spirit of manufacturers from here at home and around the world. Celebrate the can-do spirit that is bringing manufacturing back. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Todd Youngblood.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Manufacturing Revival Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick. I am looking forward to today's dialogue. This is a company that I became aware of several months ago and have been anxiously awaiting this chat. I want you to say hello to today's guest. His name is Jim Logue. He's the president of Therm Omega Tech, Inc. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you. Thanks kindly for making some time to join us. Jim, before we get into a conversation around Therm, do take a sec and tell us a little bit about you and your background.
My background is I started as a CPA with Coopers & Lybrand in the 80s, and over the years had many controller CFO positions. I was a business consultant all through, for 12 years, and did everything, mainly working with privately held businesses in succession planning and debt restructuring, and especially after 2007 in turnaround. Started working with this company after the owner went through a divorce, and eventually figured I really had fun doing this company and changed my career and became the chief operating officer of this company 2.5 years ago. Unfortunately, the owner passed away last March, and recently I purchased the company from the estate.
Oh, I'll be darned. So tell us about Therm Omega Tech. What do you do? How do you serve your market?
Our primary business is we make self-actuating temperature control valves. I would say that would be the staple of our market. We have three divisions that are working in that arena. We have a railroad division, and we're the industry leader in freeze protection valves for diesel locomotives. Almost all diesel locomotives in North America use our valve. We also have a division that makes freeze protection and scald protection valves. We make tepid water systems for the safety shower industry. And we actually have another division that comes from the founder, who was from San Antonio, Texas, but we make temperature control devices for barbecue, which just this weekend I was down at the Jack Daniels World Championships. We also have a competitive championship barbecue team.
Sometimes business is hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, it was fun, I'll tell you.
Well, help me understand how a CPA can begin to run a valve manufacturing organization. And I think there's a lesson there that you don't have to be in the family business your entire life. There's just general business skills that it requires to run any organization, including a very specifically niched organization such as yours. Talk about that transition.
Yeah, well, I would say when I was a business consultant, I generally was brought into situations that the companies needed help. And I would say that most of the tools, I'll say, that I gained to feel prepared to do what I'm doing now, or when I was hired to come in as their chief operating officer, really came from the business practices that either I corrected or that I saw were operating in businesses that I really liked. So what I was able to do was to take business practices and culture and formulate the ones that I liked with this company. In particular, I'm a big fan, and I was a big fan, of lean manufacturing. And in June of 2010, we began our lean journey, which has really worked well with this company and has not only changed how effective we are operating, but it also has had a material positive effect on the culture of the company.
Talk about the history of the company itself. I think it was founded to really serve the railroad industry, and obviously that's still a very, very critical piece of your business, but you've transitioned into industrial. Talk about the in addition to railroads and North American railroads, talk about the other markets that you serve.
The founder of the company was a gentleman named Fred Perkle, who I always refer to as a modern-day Thomas Edison. He had 27 patents.
Wow.
And he wasn't a good operating guy, but he was a phenomenal thinker, and his creativity, and just and a delightful man also. But he started, you're correct, developing a valve that replaced an electric valve for freeze protection for diesel locomotives in the early 80s. And he actually had to take over the industry that was using these other electric-based ball valves, et cetera, for freeze protection, to use a thermal, non-electric way of having freeze protection. And this is what he worked on. This is what the business was founded around. From there, we created other freeze and scold protection valves. And they're used all over, refineries, anywhere that has water running outside that, can be, pipe freezing from the elements, or scold. We also go scold. And so we've developed into there. But we've also have over the years, past couple of years in particular, have started getting into commercial plumbing. We have a valve that creates, called a circuit solver, which we just came out with a couple of months ago. That it doesn't bounce, but it basically through commercial buildings will make sure that hot water gets to all parts of that building automatically. So it doesn't, you don't no longer need balancing valves and then balancing engineers to try to get to all the far-reaching parts of a building for hot water. Ours does it automatically, and we have a valve. It's a drain tempering valve that tempers water that goes into public sewer systems to make sure that they meet code that are under 140 degrees automatically without electricity doing it. So we're getting into that industry, as well as providing tepid hot water for safety showers is another one of our industries. So we're diversifying into different industries, becoming less and less reliant on railroad.
Now, did you diversify because you wanted to grow the business, or did you have to do that to remain competitive in your market?
I would say the main reason that I did it was to get diversity in our product lines. Even though that we are continuing even to grow in railroad, we wanted to make sure that we have other product lines. I mean, who knows? I mean, someday they say, we can start running antifreeze through diesel locomotives, then our company would be affected. And I wanted to make sure that we had a nice, stable platform to be able to do that. We're also reaching out to becoming, because of our size, we're getting big enough that we can start reaching out to become OEMs to manufacturers, and we're under discussions to do that with a couple people right now.
Well, that's sort of a segue into the next conversation. How do you go to market? Do you sell direct to the end user, or do you work with other manufacturers, and do you sell through distributors? Do you have a sales force? Talk about that process a bit.
Yeah, and it's all over the board. We actually made for our circuit solver valve, the one we just came out with, we made a conscious decision that we were not going to go through reps. We really felt that this particular valve, once we got the industry decision makers to get knowledge of what our valve does, it was more of a choice. Do you want to go the old way of doing it with circuit setting valves? Or do you want to go with this newer technology, which automatically does it? If you choose to do it that way, you'll buy us. So we did not feel that we need so much a sales force or a rep to go try to, use mine versus them. And we're really going out with that concept. So far, it is we're doing really, really well. But we'll probably sell, in the next 2 months, I would say between 200 and 300 valves. And it's really funny. It's really picking up in the education sector. We have three universities on new dorm facilities putting valves in, our valve into new construction. So we really feel that we're going to be good going into 13 with that strategy. Some of our valves that we use, we go through reps. We have a small sales force, a pretty dynamic and educated customer service force, because we get a lot of inquiries now through Google. People are looking for free skull protection, and our name comes up. So we spend some money on, we've already revamped our website. We just completed it for the second time in 3 years, and obviously keeping up with the, SEO and everything like that is something that's really big for us. So we're seeing the market change a little bit about how products are being sold because more and more people are going to the web, and we're trying to stay up with that.
All right. We'll be back with Jim Logue after this commercial break.
Advanced Control Solutions, the Southeast's premier factory automation solutions provider. Advanced Control Solutions offers a comprehensive selection of automation products and services. Our priority is to help our customers gain a competitive advantage in their market through efficient and creative use of factory automation technology. By focusing on high-end technology, ACS provides innovative hardware and software solutions with superior service and technical support. By focusing on high-end technology, ACS provides innovative hardware and software solutions with superior service and technical support. We aim to bridge the gap between the factory floor and the boardroom using a range of products, from Ethernet-ready PC solutions to vision and motion control systems. Advanced Control Solutions. Learn more about us at acs-ga.com.
All right, and we're back with Jim Logue, president of Therm Omega Tech. Jim, before the break, in the first segment, you mentioned lean manufacturing. And it strikes me that virtually every organization that we've talked to on this show or in the nature of the business that we do, everybody who has adopted that or believes in that philosophy, it seems to be doing very, very well and thriving. Can you go a little bit deeper into lean manufacturing, why you really did it, what have been the critical differences you've noticed upon implementation of it?
Sure, I'd love to, because I'm very passionate about it. If you read about lean or talk to consultants about lean, they'll probably tell you that lean's about eliminating waste. And there's an acronym called Tim P. Wood that is, you know, inefficiencies in transportation and inventory and everything. And it's really it's all based on the Toyota manufacturing concept. So they're saying becoming lean, you know, you become more effective by eliminating waste. I actually think the value of lean is changing the culture of how you do business from the top down or even from the bottom up. So what we try to accomplish here is that every one of our employees, they come to work not just to do their job, but to actively and become part of how they and the company can do the job better. So even you know the shipper or the assembly guy or the guy running the machine shop, they are encouraged, they are empowered, and they are expected to be vocal and to be thinking about how their job is done. And we have continuous improvement boards, which every Tuesday at 10 o'clock our different teams meet at to discuss, you know, the assembler and the machine guy, of things that they think we can do to improve our business. And it's not even just their, their little area. It's, hey, you know, does this router have to go this way? Can we improve how we, you know, get inventory out of the system? And so it's challenging even top level stuff that they're seeing at their level. And it has just improved the culture of the company so much. And it has been, I mean, our margins, our gross margins have increased. I'd say right now we're in the low 60s, when before we were in lean, we might have been around 36%. It has been that dramatic.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And so, so I say that culture, it's the cultural aspect of lean. And just to give you an idea, we have had 70% growth over the past 3 years. We've only added 4 employees.
Wow. Well, speak more to the growth. I mean, it's a lovely segue into the next discussion I want to have. American manufacturing has had a bad rap over the last several years. But again, through the people that we talk to on this show and walking trade show floors, there seems to be a lot of optimism that things have kind of turned around. And there are organizations such as yours that seemingly, if you've seen 70% growth over the last 3 years, then obviously you have ridden the way very strongly through this recent economic downturn. What is your view on American manufacturing, and do you also agree that it's turning around, and give a tip or two to an organization that would love to see 70% growth? How are you guys pulling that off? We've touched on a number of those reasons, I suspect, but speak a little bit more of that if you want to.
Well, it's really from all the above, Todd, that it's not one single thing that has created it. We did beef up our sales and marketing efforts, and particularly marketing. I always said that we were the best company no one knew about. And so we're using more and more consulting firms to help us. Obviously, I talked about our website, which we really believe, and our SEO that you know, people to be able to find us is critical, is a big part of it. Coming out with new products was one that we really wanted to force, make a big drive towards. So this circuit solver valve, our drain tempering valve, in our barbecue division, that one has gone crazy. And I mean, I don't want to get into the numbers, but it's just so staggering. In 2009, we did 600,000 in barbecue. We're going to do 4.2 million in barbecue. And that has been mainly driving from a marketable, from understanding, you know, how people find out about us. We're blogging more, we're doing things, different marketplace than industrial, but that has been a huge part of it. I would say that, and you're asking about it, where do I feel the market's going? Yeah, I belong to a couple of networking groups, CEO level networking groups. Almost all of them are seeing, in the Philadelphia area, almost all of them are seeing either growing or very optimistic business. And I just think that, and they're doing this despite the banks still aren't lending. So I really feel that it is coming back. And I feel that, but you have to be competitive. I mean, we try to do as much business as we can with local vendors in the area, even though we do get some things from China, castings, things like that. But, you know, I think that business helps business grow. So there's probably 25 to 30 different vendors around the Philadelphia marketplace that we do business with, that as we're growing, we're helping them grow also.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jim. I thought I saw on your website that you manufacture 95% of your material on site. Obviously, you're a tried and true American manufacturer. Why have you made the decision? I mean, you could obviously perhaps go cheaper by going to China. Why is it so important that you have buttressed your manufacturing operations in the Philadelphia area? Why is that so important? And I'm assuming that's going to continue to be a focus for the organization.
Yeah, and it definitely will be. You know, we have about 60 employees here, and I know every single one of them. I want to make sure that our employees, they have jobs, or with a company that they enjoy working for. I think we have a great environment here. We profit share with our employees. And so I think it's a commitment. I feel that we're a manufacturing family, that I want to be successful. I want them to feel good about what they do. And yeah, and if there were just certain things that just don't make sense to do, like, you know, castings and things like that, that ever came back, that we could be more competitive to get that, to buy it here, we would. But you're right, overnight, you know, we manufacture and assemble 95% of our products here in our Warminster facility, and every opportunity we can get, you know, we're that's where our focus is.
You know, another consistent thing of angst that we hear on this show is, as a manufacturer such as yourself says, hey, look, I'm growing, my market's growing, I'm adding jobs, but I'm finding difficulty in finding potential employees who have the technical and the mathematical skills and just the overall ability to come in and do the job I have. What are you finding there, and what kind of training do you do to then supplement a new employee?
Yeah, you hit a big topic there. Basically, our CNC operators in our machining shop are very, very difficult to hire. We have an extensive training program. One of the things that we've done is that we started bringing in more and more interns. We've had this summer, we had a Penn State engineering intern in. We expect to have two more interns in starting in January for a whole semester. And we have a very, very enthusiastic cross-training program in our company. So we don't really try to chimney, you know, everybody's getting trained in all different fields. And so that has really made our workforce more effective. It's part of the lean, but it's also you're getting more out of your employees. So you're training them more. And so we're investing. The only way we can see, if we see somebody who's got some skills, we're letting them grow. We're not holding them back. We're saying, hey, we need you to learn this, you know, and that's how we're doing it. But I'd say our most difficult hire is an experienced setup guy in CNC machining.
Well, I commend you on having an internship program. It's surprising how many organizations we talk to don't do something like that. And that's frankly one of the very important goals of this show is to communicate the importance of organizations such as yourself to do things just like that, because I just don't know that we can rely on the education system as it currently stands to get kids interested in manufacturing again, because it is exciting, and new technologies and new innovations are making this really, this the future of this whole industry is just very, very exciting. Jim, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. I've taken up more time of yours than I promised. Before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you, and where can they learn more about Therm Omega Tech Inc.?
Sure. Well, I always lead people to our website. It's thermomegatech.com, and we're located in Warminster, about 20 miles north of Philadelphia. We ship around the world. Hopefully people will keep hearing about us.
Outstanding. Jim Logue, president of Therm Omega Tech Inc. It was great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd. Enjoyed it.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. On behalf of my guest, Jim Logue, I am Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Manufacturing Revival Radio.